in the grammars.
Well, I didn't have a chance to look, but I was thinking maybe it would be, we have had a people before chapter 13.
Yeah, we'll talk about that again today. We'll pick up on that point. Did anybody else do any checking? We found some sources. I didn't have time to check every source, but I checked all the, I checked Robertson, a bunch of all the standard ones. Nobody even, I checked all the word studies. Nobody even mentioned the problem. It was just always helpful. So it looked like most of them were taking it as the article, you know, not even stopping to look twice, just assuming that it was the article and that's all it was. But all the text that I look at, you know, have the accent on it. So the only thought I had, and I'm not happy with it, is to take the whole as an article on the entire conglomerate phrase, you know, and the group is almost as though you're specifying the group and making it the Barabbas, Simeon, and Lucos as a group, and then putting the tat, making your split, and then putting the other two afterwards again, just to lend further support to that split on the Tekai situation. That's the only thing I found that, if you leave it as the relative pronoun, that's the only thing I found that I could do with it. In other words, I don't mean an article now. What I mean is a relative pronoun in apposition. The feeling is almost like this: the group which consists of, you know, which is, or something like that. And what's that?
The King James says as.
That's not too far off. No, it's not. So that may be what's being done. The group, you know, you got prophetai and didaskaloi, which are, so forth. But the trouble is that normally, you see, if you've got a plural number following, then you would expect to find which are as a still a masculine plural relative pronoun. So instead, you almost have to conceive of the whole thing as a singular group with a neuter sense to it. And, you know, admittedly, that's not what's normally done, but that's the only thing I could figure to do with it if you leave it as a relative pronoun.
Except that the group is a plural, prophets and teachers, so it's just like the group of teachers,
uh-huh.
You know, but it's like the prophets and the teachers, and then there's a whole bunch of them.
Yeah. Unless we take it the way that Mark was suggesting yesterday, that Robertson said. Of course, Robertson didn't base that on, he didn't base, you know, or at least in the statements that I read, and I checked every statement in his big book on Acts 13:1, and he didn't make any mention about that relative pronoun there being a key to the interpretation. And the way that most of them treated it, you know, I wonder whether they even stopped and noticed that it was a relative pronoun, not the article. Because that's what we all did at first, till somebody mentioned it. Hey, that's got the accent on it, you know. Huh? I didn't check Lenski. I didn't check very many commentaries. I checked all the, you know, the Greek sources that I could. So if anybody has the time, you know, to do that, I'm sure I won't have between now and Tuesday. Unless I squeeze it in someplace. But if you're in the library here, one of the grad students or something, to check a few of the commentaries on that, see if anybody makes any mention of that point. What was another thing that I thought there was? No, I guess I was on this next verse. Okay. There was another point on this verse, too, that I did some checking on. Which one was that? The Usan. On that Usan, remember where we had to put that down as a participle modifying ekklesia, and that's what most of the other scholars did, too. And they said that it was a kind of a usage that you used for technical terms and that type of thing. So a lot of them did translate it local church, but it wasn't so much the idea, it was the being church. It was kind of the emphasis on the church present at that time. That's why they got the idea of local, because it's really focusing on that precise church. Okay, and I don't think, we didn't completely finish this though, did we, as far as discussion?
I'm just not sure what to do on the on that relative pronoun situation. If you take it as an article, of course, you have no trouble. If you take it as a relative pronoun, then about the only thing I can think of to do, even though I'm not happy with it, is either to put the whole out in opposition to this whole list of men, all five of them, or put it in opposition only to the first three. And neither one I'm very happy with. So maybe I would opt for taking that as the article on grammatical grounds. Internally, it doesn't seem to fit. There may be some arguments in the next verse, 1 Timothy 3:16, about along those lines too. Although there's some other possibilities there that I'll give you. Okay, does anybody want to bother? Well, it's we erased. Okay, we erased most of what we had there. Maybe I'll just make a comment on that rather than put it back on the board. And that is, in that list of names, we have Barabbas, Simeon, and then beneath Simeon, I don't remember what we had on the board yesterday. I don't think we got far enough to really discuss it. But Hokalumenos, Niger, should be, it's a participle, so it should be dropped on a vertical line underneath Simeon. And then have Hokalumenos, just a hole right there on the same line with the participle, because it's attributive here. And then a slanted line, and then Niger. I think we did cover that. Okay. Then Lukios, Hokurenaios, I can't read my writing here. Hokurenaios, the Syrian, was it Syrian or Cyprian or something? Yes, Cyrenian. Oh, no, that's just the article. It's just the article. The convention on the article is just to put it on the same line of the thing that's the article of. So there might be a little question here since it is an attributive, it's acting like an adjective. And I suppose then the reasoning, the same situation would accrue with any adjective that's in the second attributive position. You just stick the article on with the adjective. Okay, but with that, Lukos and the Cyrenian should be put in apposition to that. Hokurenaios should be in apposition to Lukos. And then with apposition, yeah. Just because it's a noun. So we have a noun modifying a noun, basically. It's functioning adjectively, of course, but that's what you, but it's technically an apposition because it is a noun. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Then, with that manaein, that sun trophos is also a noun. There might be a little question about it when you first look at it, as to whether it's a noun or an adjective, but it's a noun, and it means one turned with, I guess, is maybe the idea, but it means one brought up with. Somebody's brought up with somebody. And so it's, and then so you would put a sun trophos in apposition to manaein, and then put a line underneath sun trophos and put herodu underneath there. That's your genitive modifier. Brought up, as it's almost as though there's a preposition there, but it's not there. In other words, he's brought up as a, he is one brought up together with of Herod. In other words, he was brought up together with Herod, is what we put in English. But he's a, I suppose another way you could put it in English, he's a fellow, having brought up, been brought up with, he's one who has been brought up of, well, you almost have to put it in a noun idea in order to get the genitive idea to fit. The genitive idea fits fine in Greek, but it's real hard to express in English to get that same idea. And then two tetrarchu, that would go in apposition to Herodu. So you've got appositions all over the place. But see, it's Herod the Tetrarch. So it's genitive because Herod's genitive, and it's an apposition to something that's genitive, but it's not another genitive modifier of Herod, because Herod wasn't of the Tetrarch. He was the Tetrarch. So put Herodu and then in apposition to that. Yeah, it is. You have just about every kind of appositional thing you can think of in this sentence. And then Saulos is all by itself down below, so you don't have to worry about him. Okay, putting all those together, that's what we have. And like I say, the only thing I'm left in doubt about is the fact that the accents on that first, what looks like the article on Barnabas, which would technically make it a neuter singular relative pronoun, which grammatically about the only thing I can think of to do with it is stick it in that position to maybe the first three names or something and call it a group. But and like I say, I'm not real pleased with it. Yes?
If you have that in the relative pronoun as describing the whole group of I think I figured out how you could get around those K's, how that would clarify that, because you have coming down from, you have ho, you have the prophets and teachers, and
right.
Below that you have the slanted line coming to the first three, you know, with te on the slanted line, right? And then you have,
let's see.
Could you do that? Slanted line below ho.
Oh, I see. Okay. Okay. Now you've got ho in that position. And so you put ho in apposition to the group prophetai and didaskaloi and then everything else dropped under.
Here.
Okay.
And then te on this slanted line with these three, and then the slanted line following the next te with those two chi.
Okay.
And this and that.
Yeah.
And this and this. And
yeah.
That.
The only trouble is, though, that it's okay to split them, but you see, the function relationship between the whole and these in this group is the problem, I think. You still need some sort of an appositional relationship here between whole and the group, whichever group you make it fit.
That's apposition to these.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And then the whole group naming, the five named are describing
okay.
Whole.
If we take it in a sense of whole, which the whole which consists of, and then you kind of get this, the of idea is putting this in a modifying relationship to that.
Yeah,
yeah. Like that's probably as good as any of the others.
As, yeah. And then describing this and this and this and this and this.
Mm-hmm.
And that explains why these are K's here, because it's, and these are three,
putting the
and
two groups.
Those two.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a possibility. I mean, it's this one's hard no matter how you look at it if you take that as a relative pronoun. You almost like to put something understood in here too so that you can see that kind of a modifying link. Because Tassie normally doesn't sit on a line with something that's modifying something else. It's usually something that's connecting with something else, you know. So it might be better to stick something X-like here and then put the te right back up here with the tekai where you had it before and then get that kind of a relationship.
So you have a tekai here and a tekai here.
Yeah.
X there.
And then an X there of some sort, yeah. An unnamed modifying connective or an unnamed prepositional ID or something like that. It's tough. That one's tough. It's interesting you guys picked out. Now I know why Grasnick didn't diagram that one. Okay.
I'm talking about that... on one called Niger.
Yes.
Now, I looked at it as apposition.
Yeah. It could be considered that way. It's function. It's hard to describe function in some of these things, but there is some an element here that is critical, and that is that it is a participle. It does have a verbal idea, and it also has a complement to the participle. In other words, this particular verb, to call somebody something, or somebody being called something, is one of those verbs that takes an object complement type of situation. And so what we have is a verbal function there with a complement to the verb. And because of that, you need to put it on a participial line like that. And if it were a noun by itself, you see, a person could say, well, it'd be a little tougher in this one. If it were only a participle that were simply functioning as a substantive, pure and simple, with no complement to it or anything, in other words, the verbal sense of it was completely ignored for the time, as far as any function in the sentence, then it might be debatable which way you're going to go. And sometimes it depends on how... See, some nouns have come from participles. some nouns, you know, the participle was used so frequently it became a noun, and or just used like a noun. So then you have a very valid question as to what, am I going to put this down as a participle, since I know it's a participle, but it functions all the time like a noun. Then you probably have a toss-up either way. But in this case, because of the fact you had a complement to it, so far, I think that, that weighs in favor of putting it as a participle.
So a participle has a complement or an object, and it would normally...
You definitely want to put it down, yeah. And if it doesn't, then you've got a little bit more debate, you know. I think you almost have to decide, is this verb used very frequently? And if it's used real frequently, and if it's quite, it, in the context seems to be emphasizing this verbal idea, then I'd put it in that participial position. If it's a very commonly used term, you know it comes from a verbal idea, you know it's technically a participial form, but it's functioning like a noun over and over and over again, then I'd be, you know, more inclined to put it in that positional position. Yes, Greg.
Yeah, I've got a couple of questions. I think probably one you covered yesterday.
Yeah, on this verse?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Since these guys all relate to prophets and teachers, how do you make a connection so that to show that it related to both the prophets and the teachers rather than have just one line going to like the gospel line?
Oh, yeah. This is what Mark brought up yesterday. Robertson's others claim that the first three in the list are prophets and the last two are teachers, on the basis of the fact that the grouping of the five men there, you have a Te, and then Kai. So that kind of sets the first three, and then the second two you start with go to a Te again. So coordinating conjunctions are switching here, and it appears to be, I think he's got a good case for looking at two groups here, but the problem is that from the grammatical context, there's no way to grammatically link the first three with prophets and the second three with the didaskaloi. In other words, you'd have to do that from some other knowledge that you had. You couldn't do it from the grammar alone. So the way we diagrammed it was just to split our subject line with prophets and teachers and join it together down here at a point and put that over here in opposition to this whole other list. And then if you wanted to know, if you knew from other things that the groups split up accordingly, then you might be able to make some connections, but those would be based not on the grammar, those would be based on some other knowledge. And the fact is there is a way for them to say it. They could have said, and the prophets, Barnabas, Simeon, and Lucius, and Lucius, and the teachers, so-and-so. They could have split it up to make it real clear that some were teachers and some were prophets. Another possibility may be the reason for the wording like this is that the line of demarcation between prophets and teachers may not have been real clear either. Some of these men might have been in the transition, you know, as far as their ministries are concerned, so they put them all together in this group, and these are groups that are, you know, exhibiting some of these characteristics, and maybe they haven't really fully manifested. For example, in the case of Paul, you know, at that time he may have been a teacher, but he was going to move into an apostolic ministry as well, and, you know, perhaps be involved in prophetic ministry. So it's real hard to... In other words, as far as I can see, there's no grammatical link. There may be something that a person infers since the fact that he put the group to prophets and teachers, and then he lists, and he does seem to be specifying by the use of the conjunctions a distinction between the first three and the last two. But which way it lines up, I can see the reasoning that putting the first three with prophets because prophets was mentioned first, and these three are mentioned first, and the last two with teachers because and so forth. But you can't always argue that way because sometimes you put the first thing. The thing you want to put the most emphasis on first, and it may not necessarily be lining up that way. Yes?
I don't know why I didn't check Gitch's earlier, but he says that Tete and Tekai phrases, they translate it as
both and.
Both and.
Yeah.
And if you do that, it's almost like Robertson makes sense because he's saying ho, and then both Barnabas and Simon and Lucius.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, in the pause.
Yeah, right.
Manian and South.
Right. Yeah.
And that's, I don't see how you can, if it's the both and phrase, how you can keep them together like that. Because there's a definite pause in between.
Yeah.
You're naming these three, and then there's a pause, and then you suddenly say both Manian and South.
Yeah.
Also.
That's the point I'm making all along here, is that kind of a both and construction. Because you start with a Te here at the beginning of the first one, and then you have a Te at the beginning of the second one, second group. And that's what's making the split for you. But the point is, you know, in other words, I'm saying that Robertson has a good case for making a split between the first three and the last two, and that's the case. But now to assign the first three as being prophets and the second three as being teachers on the basis of the grammatical structure of this sentence alone seems to be a problem. In other words, I'm not saying that it's not true. I'm just saying that you can't prove it from the grammatical connection because prophets and teachers were grouped as a compound subject. And it's hard to split a compound subject into a link here when there's another way that this could be done that would remove any ambiguity, where you could have those first three, connect those with prophets, have the second two connect those with teachers and remove any ambiguity. See what I'm saying? So there's valid case for splitting the two groups because of this tekai construction. But because of the way that the rest of the grammar is set up, I don't think you can draw the kind of links that would prove. In other words, I don't think you could say, therefore, Simeon and Barnabas and Lucius were prophets, and Manaen and Saul were teachers on the basis of the grammar alone. I wouldn't bet my eternal life on it. Yeah, okay.
Well, they had to have a particular specific reason to split it like that,
mm-hmm.
and to separate the first three and the last two because it's so distinct.
Uh-huh.
And
with that, I agree.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's as if they're two distinct groups of two distinct groups,
mm-hmm.
Because you know, earlier in the sentence it's specified prophets and teachers.
Mm-hmm.
The context would imply that you have prophets and teachers, two groups, and then you've named two specific, clear, distinct, enumerated groups of people
mm-hmm.
down here.
Mm-hmm.
And we do the same thing. Pastor, you know, the pastors and elders.
Yeah.
Don,
I got your point.
And
mm-hmm.
you know, Mike and
right.
George or something.
Right.
In the whole context, your mind pauses with prophets and teachers and sort of holds that in place. And then you see two groups of names. You're reapplying those back up there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like you almost can't get away from doing it when you're reading it. And it's not like it's your English or anything,
mm-hmm.
but the whole structure throws you into that.
Mm-hmm.
You can't divide it up any other way, really.
Well, I think the problem is that because there is a clearer way to do it than that, and because of the fact that it's possible that the three are mentioned first because that was the larger group, and maybe they were the teachers. The first three were teachers, the other two were prophets. And in other words, I'm saying the most probable scenario is what you described. The fact is that you can split the two up on the basis of the conjunctions. The fact is that prophets and teachers are both mentioned. But what's uncertain to me, you know, in other words, what I would not bet my eternal life on is that the first three had to be the prophets and the last three had to be the teachers. Just, I think that's the most probable, like you say, because prophets are mentioned first and all for all the reasons. You know, if I had to make a decision, what's the probabilities, I would say that's the highest probability. But I wouldn't be able to say to somebody, I can prove that these three were prophets and the other two were teachers, just because of the fact that it may be split up along a different line than we're familiar with. It may be split up according to the numbers, according to the prominence of the individuals, and other factors, less likely, but still possible. In other words, I don't like to be dogmatic where the connection is not as tight as it could be. You know, it's not an airtight case, but it's the most probable case. And I'm sure that's what Robertson is going by. You know, he doesn't do a lot of elaboration on it. He just kind of says, well, here we have these two groups. And it follows the same kind of reasoning that you brought. So, but I still maintain that the connection is one that is based on the semantics and the meaning and the flow rather than on the rigid grammatical structure. In other words, there's no rigid grammatical rules that will connect your first three with prophets and your second three with teachers. There may be semantic considerations that you mentioned. You know, it's most likely that you're going to put it in this order, and grammatically you are making a split in the groups, what the criterion for the split is may not be whether they're prophets or teachers and where the line is there. So I would say most likely, but don't be too dogmatic. In other words, don't use that as a proof text to establish the fact that Lucius, for example, was a prophet and not a teacher. Because you just don't have enough there to prove that ironclad from the grammar. Now, you might have another verse someplace, you know, that has a bearing on this. Yeah?
Another question about hope. Can I bring that up again?
Yeah, go ahead.
If te is post-positive,
mm-hmm.
and ho describes a whole group of five,
mm-hmm.
or it's like it's describing the group, then te does not... Ho is not part of what te is describing. Ho is separate from it. So te would have to be post-positive at the bottom.
Well, no, not necessarily, because the post-positive idea is just in the clause. Within the clause, it's the second word in the clause. Sometimes it doesn't make any sense why, you know, I mean, in other words, it's just stuck at the second word in the clause, almost always. There are a few exceptions.
Saying that ho is not part of the clause. If it's a relative pronoun, it's like it's up on the line.
Oh, I see. Okay.
In the clause.
Yeah, ho, let me look at the wording here again just to make sure I'm seeing what you're seeing there. Okay, hote Barnabas. Well, no, it's just it comes after the first position there, hote. In other words, you in effect what you're when it's post positive, it's equivalent to kai being out in front of ho. Now suppose it was kai instead of te. Then you probably have kai ho Barnabas.
Right.
Kai, oh, see. Both the
you couldn't if ho was a relative pronoun, which
mm-hmm.
is an apposition to Protestant teachers.
Mm-hmm.
Then Kai would not be out in front of Ho. It would be Ho, and then Kai Barnabas.
Oh yeah, okay, yeah. See, that's good. That's good. That's a good point. The
would have to be behind Barnabas instead
mm-hmm.
of front.
Now, see, but the same thing would hold if this was an article. You know, if this was an article, you expect the same thing, and you expect the article on Barnabas and so forth. And here and we go. So it doesn't really.
So
it doesn't really.
So this can't be the relative pronoun describing the whole group. This cannot be then because Hay is behind it rather than behind Barnabas. That ho cannot be
mm-hmm.
a relative pronoun, you see what I'm saying, describing in apposition to Protestant teachers. Because if it was, you'd see ho.
Okay. Well, no, stop and think about this. If te is in this te construction where you have both and,
uh-huh.
and the te then we're going to translate as both, then we come along and we say both the one which consists of. You see? In other words, it would be even more emphatic that we're splitting the whole thing. I think what you're saying is that it doesn't apply to the entire five, right? Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah, it can.
Okay. Yeah, that...
So, it would have to only apply to the first three.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's still not necessarily like Mark said because of the fact that it is post positive. It's always going to follow that first word. It doesn't really, regardless of any grammatical relationship there. You could still consider
because the whole it would be referring to the whole the first group and the second group, and ten is just the second word in the whole clause. It doesn't have to be the second word in the first part.
Well, say mm-hmm. instead of the construction was just a tie. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Barnabas, tie, command. You wouldn't need, or you'd say Barnabas, tag, tie, command, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you took that whole off.
Right.
Okay. What I'm trying to explain is if you had, say you had an article before Barnabas, say ho,
mm-hmm.
ho te Barnabas. That's the way it would look if ho was the relative pronoun describing, you know, you take from te on, you just take it all.
Oh, okay.
And you've got is ho there, and
yeah.
in opposition to Protestant teachers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, then you start out ho Barnabas, and with a te construction, so it'd be ho te Barnabas, right? Tai to man.
Mm-hmm.
So then you'd be going ho Barnabas and Simon and
yeah, there is a thing that can break it down though, and that is that as long as you hold your te and te structure as referring to those first three and the second two, it's all right. Although there's another possibility that te, your te kai could go. See, since it works with te, it works with kai kai, and it works with te kai. To get the both and. A person could come along and say, this first te is just introducing the first group, and is saying both Barnabas and Simeon and Lucius, and both Manaen and Saul. Still splitting them up. But using the bolt structure within each one of these individual groups. No, it wouldn't necessarily, because you have the relative pronoun out there in front, and it's going to be postpositive to the relative pronoun. It won't necessarily be postpositive to the
relative pronoun is not part of the group. The relative pronoun is all by itself.
Well, that's true, but it's still. But see, the concept of postpositive doesn't make any difference whether it's part of the group or not. Really, it's just the second word in the clause and the second word in the sentence. And that's where the rule, you know, applies. So sometimes it does get a little awkward. It's again not a real easy thing to make a dogmatic decision about. And I think the biggest problem is this being taken as a relative pronoun. If I had my choice, I think I'd opt for. And I want to look at the manuscripts and see what kind of evidence there is in the unseals or anything for it. But I would take a very serious. Yeah. Yeah, if there are some accents in some of the unseals, it would be worth checking that. But it's interesting that nobody seems to make any issue of this. I'm kind of surprised about that. Well, we'll have to leave there because I don't want to take too much more time talking about it. It's kind of a, you know, thorny point that we can argue and argue about, I suppose. Let's put it this way. I won't give you this one on a test. Yeah, some of you, and I didn't have time to check everything, so I didn't check him. Just for curiosity, you know, this is one of these things that your curiosity gets to you. Somebody can see it, check a few more sources. If anybody finds a source in your that says something about it, be sure and let us know, and we'll talk about it. Okay, let's get into another one here, the frying pan into the fire. 1 Timothy 3:16, does anybody care to put it up on the board? John, go ahead.
Why not?
One good thing about the diagramming, though, is that it points out issues like this, where there, you know, you might miss completely what the problem is in some verses without laying them out like this. And I hate to say that this is a good way to find out problems, but sometimes we need to do that. Sometimes revelations are born of these things, too. So I'm not saying that I've shut the door on this verse here. If you want to pursue this and you know, do some more research. Another thing could be done is to try to find parallel examples of the situation. There may not be any of the particular cases. This would be real hard to find, too, of course. Need that computer program again. Probably as good as any of this.
I guess what we'd want to is put that over. Put a mix in there.
Observation alters.
Yeah.
The
observation
the
alters.
The faster it changes.
This one was a good one. I'm glad this was the one that was in Bagger. If nothing else, it will help you. It will plug you right into the controversy. There are whole books written about those words.
Yeah.
Or we can get rid of all these dashes and put a dash right there.
Right. That's a very diplomatic way to do it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good. Well, first of all, we'll take some comments. Let's before we comment about how what goals modified, let's leave that for last. Let's try to get everything else straightened out within the thing first. Tony, what do you have?
Well, when I did this thing out the other day, I didn't have any of the prepositional phrases up on standard. I had them down as a nonverbal modifier.
Okay. Yeah. That's what I would have done in most of these cases. Again, this is a real tricky situation. It's real hard to decide. We did have some yesterday, and I was making a big point for putting them up on standards. And today I'm saying, well, but it's a different situation. These are non-transitive verbs.
They aren't.
Well, not all of them. Or most of them are. We've got some action involved. And they and it's usually the verb to be or an equated verb that where you see a prepositional phrase put in a position like that. Because you see, it was manifested in the flesh. It's describing the how, it's an adverbial modifier, but it's how, where, you know, what. Well, maybe John, we can maybe just, you don't even have to rewrite it. We'll just take that
by faith.
Yeah, by faith. But does everybody see the reason? I think it's again a hard decision to make. I think what we may have to do, this may be the right convention, is that with equated verbs, you can put prepositional phrases in a position like that. I don't want to say that too dogmatically, though, because there may be some where it actually is. But what we have to decide is my prepositional phrase receiving the action of the verb if I put it in an object position? And so, for example, in the next one, justified in the spirit. Is in the spirit, is the phrase in the spirit receiving the action of being justified? Or is it modifying the action, or telling you the realm within the action, which you asked me, is it more locative of telling you the realm that this is happening, or is the spirit receiving the action? Well, see, the spirit may be, you know, you could say a spirit was justified, but this is trying to say justified in the realm of spirit. In other words, with reference to that realm, he's being justified. And the next one, scene of angels, that one's a little bit trickier in that, yeah, I think you may have a good case for just diagramming that way. I put just the angel voice underneath again. And I was debating on that too. Because you see what, you almost have to put it underneath, because the problem would be this. If you put it in an object position, it's receiving the action, and it'll be the angels that are being seen. And so you want to, in effect, it's the subject, kind of the subject idea, seeing of angels. It means that the angels are the ones that are doing the seeing, and he's the one that's being seen. So it wouldn't really go in a subject position, but it would, you know, the norm, let me put it this way, the normal way that you see this expressed is with Hugh Paul with the genitive, seen by angels. And I looked this up in commentaries, and they all say that it's unusual here to see it in the dative, and with no preposition. So it probably is best and safest just to put it in a dative position and then leave the decision as to what sense is the dative up to the, you know, conjecture there. But you're going to be safer if you stick it underneath there and then say, well, I'm not sure if this verb takes things a funny way or just what, but I'll be safer if I do that, because it's not really receiving the action of the verb. Well, that's a possibility. But again, indirect object, and I think it's close to that idea. What I think is, it's in the realm of angels that he's being seen. Seen in the realm of angels. Seen in the domain or the sphere of angels. Is my opinion as to what it's saying. I think it's a locative idea. But, see, because an instrumental idea, seen by means of angels, that's kind of weak, you know. I mean, it's not God seeing it by means of angels. Seeing them by means of angels. Or maybe it is, and we've got to change our theology. But I think it's more likely to see seen in the realm of angels. Among in that realm. I think that'd be the safest way to go.
And all the other words are realm type words anyway.
Yeah, right. See, all the rest of them have N. All the rest of them have N. This one doesn't. I suppose you could put an N in this one too. It'd be more clear, but it seems to have the same idea. All the rest of them are dative. And That's what I would do with that. That certainly would be the least, get you in the least trouble just by dropping it underneath and putting it as a dative modifier, and then the door's open for your instrumental lock of it, or just a simple dative idea, seen to angel, or seen with reference to angel. And that may be the basic raw idea, seen with reference to angel.
Well, if you had an N in there, it would be saying that he was seen
Well, either that or seen in angels, in the group of angels, you know, among angels. Oftentimes, in with a plural, it's got the idea of among, you know, in the group. So you could have, that could fit, seen in among the angels. Seen among angels. Yes?
Because it's dative, with drop a little light, you wouldn't have that dative.
No, not unless you knew it was an indirect object, not unless it was receiving, it was benefiting from the action. So the angels themselves, unless we could argue that the angels were benefiting from the action, again, see, the verb to see, you don't usually see to something. See, well, you see something, it's a transitive verb, that's why it can be an object. Most of them say that this is just an equivalent expression to pupo with a genitive, but I'm not sure that they only give a few other examples, and all of them could be taken as locatives. So I don't know if they've got a very good argument anyway. Yeah.
So I wanted to say that since all of these are passive voice,
yeah.
Is there any instance where you would have it? You can't have a direct object then, with a verb in the passive voice, because it's really
right. Old. Yeah, that's another point. It's just the fact that it's passive means that the object position has been moved to the subject, as it were. And the correct agent you would have to put it in the pole to the genitive. That's an idea. So, yeah, you really wouldn't have an object position with a passive verb anyway. Okay. So all of those ends just drop them down underneath as modifiers, and then the envelope have a problem with the same position. Drop it down and have it modified. That way, I think you're going to be the same or the other ones. The other ones, I don't think there's any real doubt about. Question over here, Dale.
Could we take envoys as instrumental in the sense of men seeing Jesus by means of angels?
Well, I think it would be possible. It would certainly be possible. If you're thinking of it as men seeing by means of angels, and so the statement would be being saying, he was seen by means of angels. That's an interesting point. I hadn't thought about that. In the case of Paul, for example, on the Damascus Road, you could argue that it was a vision, it was something that, God was transmitting to him and so forth. This is talking about the sudden state of it. That might be a possibility. Of course, your diagramming would be the same way. You just drop it down underneath, just the same as the other. I can't think of any parallel passages to the concept and so forth, but I think the idea of just in general the angelic involvement in men's contact with God, book Revelation, and lots of things could be included there. That's a good thought. That's another reason why the diagramming exercise itself kind of opens the door to considering the possibility. So either seen in the realm of angels or seen by men, by means of angels.
I thought the only thing that would limit that is the fact that if it was a person manifested in flesh, which obviously would be an angel to see. Unless we're saying angels brought revelation in order for them to see God manifested in flesh.
Yeah, and the scene can be taken more in the sense of perception. This is from Barabo, and it can be. It can be taken in the same in the sense of perception rather than just seeing it through physical eyes, too. Well, good. Appreciate that. Well, our time's almost up. Yeah, we've got to get together about this whole thing.
I had a question about
everything up there should be okay. Homo is an adverb. See that omega sigma at the end? It was built from a participle. But it is an adverb. See, remember, to make an adverb, you take the genitive plural, omega nu, you change the nu to the and that turns into an adverb now. So as an adverb, it's going to be a nonverbal element, as part of its function relationship.
within the book.
Yeah.
Well, you know, where those
I'm
mean?
Yeah, I'm not certain to see how it's modified. That's confessively either. It seems like it's almost evocative in a way, but and confessively, things, you know, great is all mysteries.
Well, yeah, but see, the point is that confessively, it is an adverb idea. And the thing that you're confessing about is the predication you're making. Great is the mystery. So confessedly or indeed or anything like that would go in there would be an adverbial modifier in its attach point. It's really the whole concept, but its attach point is at the verb whenever you're making a statement like that. Your real focal point for adverbs is right zeroing in on the verb, unless it happens to be modifying the adjective. I suppose a person might argue that you could have confessedly great.
Yeah.
Isn't that a good idea? Somebody might have done that. That would be the only other thing I could see a part of the possibility.
You're still equating it, though.
Yeah, you see, with the verb to be, you still got the equation, so the net result is going to be the same.
You could almost kind of put it aside and do the whole thing in brackets, in a sense, you know.
Yeah. That's the way he was saying, kind of leading into the whole thing. So either on Epson or on Mega, most likely Epson, that's the normal way we do it, and it's still going to give you the same effect. Yes.
So adjective forms used as adverbs sometimes.
Yes. Well, the adjectives sometimes are used as adverbs. This one happens to be a real clear-cut adverbial form.
Yeah.
It's a negative sigma. Yeah. You don't have to worry about that here. Yes.
I have trouble seeing that as an adverb because how can something confessedly be? I guess it can be confessedly great.
Oh, I
see. It confessedly is.
Well, that's a good point. I think it's a predicate in construction. Maybe what we need to do is put attach it right at the line between that.
Yeah,
well, but no, it is normally done on the verb and the predication. But the problem is that with a predicate adjective, you've almost got a kind of a compound verbal idea. You know, it's not really a simple, straightforward assertion of existence. Although something could confessedly be, you know, I mean, confessedly God exists, you know. We're all willing to admit that or something, you see, and I think you could have that question. Yes, Mark.
We're going to take any comments on both.
Yeah, go ahead. You can be the first one. Maybe the last one, too.
I wasn't even satisfied with my own, but I took it, I took the whole thing, host and then all the verbs
mm-hmm.
as an apposition to the mystery, and
mm-hmm.
I put host on a standard and then a slash and then the whole thing there, and then with a dotted line wiki referring up to something up there.
Okay.
Because the mystery would seem to encompass the whole thing and not be it looks like a nonverbal or a how does he have now a verbal sort of modifier.
The host though is what you do have is a series of what you have is a whole compound verb structure. See, host plus all the verbs, those are finite verbs, even though they're all passive. So you do have a whole series of sentences in effect there, or you know maybe a sentence subject with compound set of verbs. So it is a sentence structure. So it would have to be considered as a subordinate clause to the previous. But I think you are. But a subordinate clause can stand in the position of apposition just about anything. So I think the way you diagram it is fine. And that was one of the first possibilities that I gave too, is to put that in apposition to mystery. You can't see the problem. You can't have folks refer as a relative pronoun back to mystery because the cases are wrong and the gender's wrong. But you could make it refer to mystery as an appositional thing. Make it an apposition, and then. Created the mystery of godliness. That's what a lot of the translations do. He who was manifested the flesh, and so they put the he in, so you're not referring back to mystery, but it is an apposition to mystery, and then the he is going to refer to something back up in the context. And I think that maybe the safest way to do it. Although there are some other possibilities that I'll give you from some other sources and so forth too. But we'll talk about this next time. That was wrong.
We have a quiz.
Yeah, Tuesday a quiz on that
principal part. And then that should give us about enough time, you know, half an hour or so to finish this up. If we could finish this up. One of the simplest way out of this is just put it that, oh, and then you've got it finished. That diagram is beautiful. Some argue that the reason for the abruptness there is because of the hymn, part of the Christian hymn that's being put in there.
And quite an interesting, it's really an interesting situation. Yeah. Okay, yeah, I'll see if you can write one for us.
Well, you write both of the things. Maybe you could just mumble like that.
Then we'll have him write one on John 1:18. To put this in perspective, these are among the most difficult things you'll ever run into.
So,
No, because that's feminine, this masculine.
Okay. Note it. Now, this is the important. See, you got to get the revelation on his verse first before he's back here.
Uh-oh. He's going to give me the revelation.
Private interpretation.
This is the only possibility that this is. If you remember back in the first chapter of the book of John, we have a concept becoming a person, isn't that right? Sort of. Same thing here. You're having the concept of godliness being made manifest in the person of Jesus Christ. If you look in the whole context right around that whole little area, it's all about godliness. And then it says, and I'm writing this that you may know how men ought to behave in the house of God. That's your definition of godliness. Godliness has to do with the proper behavior before God. And what he's saying is this godliness is Jesus Christ. You want to know about godliness, the mystery of godliness?
Mm-hmm. You put it on or you
Well, I'm not sure if you, I don't know if you put it actually under the mystery of the godliness or just under Eusebius. My tendency probably to make it most clear if you could put it under Eusebius, because that's really what the whole thing's talking about. This is all talking about one person here. As you can see it, it's lined out. It's talking about one person. It's an exact parallel structure all the way down. Who's that one person? It has to be Christ. It can't be anybody else because nobody else was, you know, as it were, rebounded in the world, reached up, raised up into glory, justified in the Spirit. And it talks about that's the only one who would fit the context, and that's the one who's our example. And that's the whole point of those passages that